Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Greetings, everybody.
And tonight we're going to talk about the theology of the Reverend Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Lots been made lately of Reverend Bonhoeffer. A movie by Angel Studios came out about the their made up version of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life. They kind of decided to create a Bonhoeffer in their own image, and that's what they did. And so we're going to talk some about Bonhoeffer's actual theology and his thought processes in light of, you know, the movie having come out just recently. If you haven't had a chance to see it, I recommend you don't. But, I mean, if you want to give Project 2025 writers some money, then that's how you do it, is go see Bonhoeffer. Yeah. So anyway, that is our podcast for today. Thank you for joining us. No, I'm just kidding.
And the credits roll.
And the credits roll. Okay. So, Reverend Mark and I were talking about this yesterday, and I thought, you know, this would be a great topic for a podcast, and, well, here we are. We were sitting at Marcella's in their smoking lounge talking. We've actually fallen quite in love with Marcella's smoking lounge, except when she opens the back door and leaves it open and freezes us to death. There's some good scenery. We got to meet a dear friend of ours last night there, who stopped in. Quite surprising. Dr. Luther Felder, United Methodist minister in the area.
Good to see you, Dr. Felder.
A former chaplain and professor at Payne College here in Augusta. And so it's good to see him, and he's been messaging me throughout the night and into today.
Oh, good.
So he's had a lot to talk about. But, okay, so to Dietrich Bonhoeffer, we were talking about, I had just finished listening to the audio book of The Cost of Discipleship, which is one of Bonhoeffer's seminal pieces, most of it written while he was in internment in one of the concentration camps in Germany. And to some degree, Cost of Discipleship was kind of a look at, I'm trying to decide how I want to go about this. So he was arrested and imprisoned not just because of his religious beliefs, which were, you know, antithetical to Nazism, fascism, but also because he had participated in a plot to assassinate Hitler. And so Cost of Discipleship is kind of his I think attempt at rationalizing what he did and giving at least some rationale and reasoning for why he supported offing someone versus, you know, just leaving them in office, letting, you know, what may come. So he talks a lot about the dynamic between cheap grace and costly grace. And in cheap grace, he basically says that it's grace without needing forgiveness, without needing change, without becoming a better person. And then he talks about costly grace as the grace that's willing to lay down your life for the message of the gospel, that, you know, is willing to flog yourself for your sins and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so, cost of discipleship basically runs between those two themes, costly and cheap grace, over and over and over again. And so we got to talking about that and about grace, how grace is not exactly how we tend to view it. Grace is a very complex concept. And so we kind of got to talking about that, and how, you know, I think for my part, the Bonhoeffer message, I think that he got it wrong only in the sense that he didn't carry it to its full conclusion, which I think, you know, had he been given time, if he hadn't been executed, he would have probably gotten there. But I contend that cheap grace is not as much grace not looking for a change as it is grace that is, you know, willing to sit in the pew on Sunday and call yourself a Christian, but then on Monday ignore the homeless person sitting on the street corner who needs, you know, a bite to eat. You know, to me, that's cheap grace, you know, because it's easy to call ourselves Christian. It's not easy to actually live the message, you know. Your thoughts, River?
Well, I do believe you know, grace is an extremely, it's a highly debated topic in church. I was brought up where grace is something that we didn't tend to like to teach a lot, because I think some people have a hard time defining what grace is. I have heard the term greasy grace, you know. I guess that would be the Bonhoeffer's grace that doesn't cost anything, versus grace that you know, enables people to live that very, very strict life.
Right.
And, you know, grace to me is something that, you know, at what level does grace become not greasy grace and move over into something else? You know, the grace of God simply to me is that is the unmerited favor
right
from God. A lot of circles that I traveled in, that I was in, I didn't adopt this for myself, but a lot of people looked at the grace, the unmerited favor of God, revolving around materials, things. You know, God
right
will favor me to give me more money, more things, more stuff. And God can bless us. That's not a denial from me at all.
Right.
But it's so much deeper than that. It's so far beyond just simply saying, God's favor is on me so that
right
I can have a new this and a bigger bank account and a new that. And again, God can do that, but that's not what favor.
Right.
The grace of God is an empowerment in order for me to have the knowledge that I belong in the family of God, that I belong to the family of God. I'm not just simply invited in, but I have a place. I have a place at the table. I'm part of that family. I'm part of the presence of God.
Right.
And there's nothing that I can do that will change God's desire for me to have fellowship, to be loved, and to receive that love. And you know, we can get into the depth of it a little later.
Right.
I want to shoot all my bullets up here at the beginning. But it reminds us of the goodness of God and that the goodness of God is, you know, not sitting over here waiting for us to get all our merits lined up and all of our best actions and our perfections lined up, and then all of a sudden, you know, well, that unleashes the grace. That's what unleashes the grace, is, you know, I'm over here perfected.
Right.
And sure, you know, the more we mature and able to handle certain things, you know, the more responsibilities God does give us.
Right.
But it doesn't diminish whether I do all the stuff or I don't. It never diminishes how much God loves me.
Right.
How much God favors me and desires for me to fulfill my callings in life, to be in God's presence, to be a part of the family of God, to be somebody who is a carrier of the love of God to the world. You know, that love has been placed in me by the grace of God. I didn't do anything to get there.
Right.
It was there before I showed up. And there's a deeper, you know, there's some deeper aspects of that, but I think sometimes when you're in the positions like Bonhoeffer was, where you're looking at some stuff and you're really struggling, you know, sometimes our inbred theologies start coming to the surface, and
right.
We really start trying to grasp at answers. You know, are we at the right answers? Are we trying to think them out, whether how crazy they are? Because I've been there before, where I've, you know, had to deconstruct my faith and realize some of the stuff that I believed was BS.
I get that. Well, and you know, I think too, Bonhoeffer was inspired by the church in Corinth, who, you know, made a big deal of, oh, we have grace, we have to use it, or, you know, God, Jesus died in vain if we don't use that grace. And he points out in Cost of Discipleship that, at least in his day and time, which is World War II era, the Lutheran churches in Germany were big about this concept that Martin Luther had written, you know, sin boldly, Luther had written. And they kind of took that to mean that we should continue our life the way it is so that grace may abound. It's the same concept Corinth had. You know, you run out of grace if you don't use it, you know. that was not exactly right, you know.
God's bank account of grace is so small.
Right, right. And so he comes up with a concept, which I think is kind of interesting, is that his thing was, he believed Luther was basically being sarcastic when he said it. You know, if you're going to sin, at least sin boldly, you know. And so that's kind of the premise he takes on the Lutheran theology, but he attacks it pretty heavily, this idea that, you know, grace is a finite thing, that, you know, there's only a certain amount of grace, and if you don't use it up, you lose it. And I think that a lot of Christians today still believe that in some way or another, you know, that if they don't use the grace that God gives them, then they're going to lose it, you know. And so I think that it's that's one of those things that has not gone away in our modern era. It still remains pretty entrenched in some people's faith practice.
I think grace is simple, but it has such depth and complexity to it that I think a lot of times people don't want to tackle it, and to want to look at it as, okay, because then you lose an element of control over folks if people fully understand what grace is. There's one mindset that if you really expand upon grace, people are just going to go out there and just like Luther right. said, you know, sin big. Versus other people that look at grace and it's like, no, it is empowering you to get to places in your life. It's right. empowering you to get to mindsets and understandings of God in life. And I look at God's grace as, you know, Paul wrote that it's the goodness of God that leads people to repentance. So if you, you know, follow that out, that the more connected that I am to that goodness and the more that I'm seeing that goodness in my life, you know, the benefits of living a life of forgiveness, of receiving forgiveness, of giving love, receiving right. love, and I see that, it begins to, I'm not hyper-focused on, I've got to not be angry or I've got to not do this. You simply start moving away from those things and abandoning the behaviors that don't serve you. Because there's, you know, there's the supernatural power of God that enables us to do things, but we have to want to connect to that.
Right.
We have to want to cooperate with that. So, you know, God can have grace for me all day long, but if I'm sitting there resisting it, it doesn't diminish it. It doesn't make it go away. It's there nonetheless. And I would right. argue that it's the grace of God sustaining me even in my stupidity, mm-hmm. and keeping me in my stupidity. So, but if you teach that type of message with grace and God's goodness, a lot of groups, in my opinion, look at it as, well, then I don't really have a way to, you know, control somebody, because the church as a whole enjoys controlling folks through the mindset of sin. That's sin.
Right.
You can't do that. You know, if you come into the church, you have to filter through all of the do it my way, do it the church way, versus looking at grace and, you know, realizing that a lot of people are on very unique journeys to get to where some of us are.
Right.
And I'm on a journey trying to obtain that maturity. You know, it's incorrectly translated perfection in some passages of scripture and some verses. But it's basically that maturing state where I'm growing.
Right. Right.
In my understanding of God's goodness. And to me, it's once I begin to experience that, and then I look at the things that no longer serve me, the attitudes, the mindsets, then, you know, is it the fact that I've got to beat my flesh, or I just simply walk away from that? You know, I focus, because I believe when we focus more on the goodness that God's placed in us and that grace, we start diminishing those other things because we're right. more focused on that grace.
Well, and Bonhoeffer too mentions the fact that he believes that cheap grace comes out of disobedience. We're not willing to be obedient to the call of God, to follow his message and to follow his path. And I think that that's partially right. I think that sometimes there are Christians out there who, you know, I think actively wish to do things that are contrary to what they know is right. But I think that also part of cheap grace is, as much as I hate to say it, it's just pure laziness on the part of Christians. You know, if you stop and you think about it, the call of Christ is hard. Love God, love your neighbor, take up your cross and follow me. I mean, these are messages that are not easy. They require us to do a certain amount of work. And to some degree, the idea, and this is what I think he ultimately was getting to before he died, and that was the idea that, you know, Christianity is solely by faith alone. that there are no works involved at all. It's just faith alone, sola fide. I think that he was finding it very difficult to accept, especially in the period where most of his church at the time, the Confessing Church in Germany, had so solely and wholeheartedly backed fascism in Germany, had so wholeheartedly supported Trump, not Trump, Hitler. It's hard to keep them straight sometimes. So wholeheartedly supported Hitler that he found it hard to accept that, you know, faith is all that's required for salvation. You know, because he sat there and he goes, you know, if that's the case, then all these people who are supporting the murder of millions of Jewish people and Romani and gay people and ministers, then there's nothing wrong with what they're doing because they have grace and they have, you know, the faith in God, faith in Jesus. So he found that hard to swallow, I think, and that's why he felt the need to distinguish between what was going on in Germany and the churches, which he felt was a capitulation to evil, and those churches that were still willing to stand up and risk the wrath of the state by not supporting what was going on in the state. And so for him, this is kind of a manifesto, as it were, of, you know, why he felt compelled to act despite knowing that, you know, murder was wrong. You know, the whole book is basically that idea, that premise of, you know, trying to justify what he had done. It's almost like a seminary question from a professor, you know, if you had a chance to go back in history and stop Hitler from being born, would you do it? Is it morally right to do it? You know, and that's essentially all of Bonhoeffer's book, is this concept of what is it right, you know, to do what is morally repugnant to save lives. And I think ultimately he comes to the conclusion that, yes, it is morally right to try to stop the death and murder of other people. But at what point and at what cost does it cross the line? And I don't think he ever got to that point before he passed away, where he never really answered his own question. Is, you know, my working to assassinate Hitler, was it morally right or morally wrong? And I don't think he ever got to that answer. And so his ultimate conclusion to the cost of discipleship is basically, hopefully God will forgive if I did wrong. You know, grace will abound because I chose to take a step that was costly. And so I'll be forgiven ultimately. So for Bonhoeffer, it's a little bit of he twists himself into a pretzel to get where he needs to be. Do I think Bonhoeffer was right in associating with those who wanted to assassinate Hitler? I don't know. I don't know what I would do in the same situation.
I don't think you can look at, you know, the whole of Germany and people that, quote unquote, have faith in God, but are backing, you know, the genocide of races, and go, you know, will God forgive them, or are they in God's grace and so forth? The hardest question in those situations is, yes, God would forgive, And that's the part of grace that we have the most difficult time dealing with, is the fact that people that do things that are so horrible and commit murders,
right?
You know, that God can get involved and do something to save that soul and to restore that soul from an obvious deterioration from morals.
Right.
But to step back and, you know, to say that a whole group that go to church and they have faith in God, but they're backing this stuff, you know, are they true, you know, Christians? You know, obviously, if you're living a life that is sanctioning, you know, genocide, you're not following after Christ.
Right.
You're not following after, you're not living in the love of God.
Right.
You know, and so forth. And so, you know, there's plenty, it's a complex situation, and I can understand his contorting into his position and having a difficulty being in that position. It's not a simple answer of, you know, yes, no, and, you know, perhaps.
Right.
It's very deep, and, you know, that's why we're not commanded to live in the judgment seat.
Right.
Only God can.
Right.
God is the only person that can judge, and it's not up to us. You know, if we don't see the fruit of Christ-like behavior, then we can deem that they're not following after the teachings of Christ. Doesn't mean that they're a person that God's grace won't extend to or doesn't extend to.
Right.
You know, God's trying to get all of us to the place of accepting the love and the walk of life that Christ lived before us.
Right.
God, that's the ultimate goal for all of us, is to be in that, you know, the little Christs walking around the earth and being like, you know, Christ in the world. So, but to step back and to, you know, I don't think we can step back and just start questioning people's salvation or, you know, God's love for those people. We can step back and say, well, they don't have the fruit of Christ. Right. They don't have the fruit of the Spirit. Right. They don't have the fruit of love if they're backing these particular things. And, you know, you don't know the warped teachings that they've received and have been taught. And it's like understanding hospitality in the Old Testament,
right,
as something that was a huge failing for the nation of Israel. Mm-hmm. And they were chastised often because, you know, we look at hospitality today, and we think, oh, it's inviting somebody into your house,
right,
and, you know, you offer them a cup of coffee, and y'all talk and offer kind words. Hospitality in the time of biblical times was literally life and death.
It was.
And so people not embracing that type of teaching because they think it's a surface-level teaching, we perish for a lack of knowledge. We perish,
right,
for a lack of understanding. And that perishing doesn't necessarily mean that we're just going to, you know, we just die because we don't,
right,
know. No, we lose. We, you know, we operate in a form of death, if you will, by not living the fullness of the life of God. We perish. We're not in the life of God for a lack of understanding how God would do a thing.
Right.
So, you know, as you're sitting here talking it out, you understand his, like you said, the pretzel,
right,
position that he finally got into.
Well, he also, interestingly enough, right before he ends up arrested, he had traveled to the United States to speak at Union Theological Seminary. And the administration at Union Theological offered him a teaching position and offered for him to stay in the United States. And Bonhoeffer ultimately responds that if he doesn't go back to Germany and speak truth to power, then he'll have no moral ground to stand on when Hitler's gone in the rebuilding of Germany, because he took the easy way out, essentially, you know, of avoiding persecution. So he ends up going back to Germany, where he ultimately was arrested and put into a concentration camp. And, you know, many people ask me and go, well, you know, that was, you know, he had a perfect opportunity to save himself. You know, it's just like Anne Frank's, you know, Anne Frank's and her family had actually applied for asylum in the United States. They were denied under FDR, but they had tried to come to the United States to avoid what was going on in Germany. But the question then becomes, would anybody read her diaries and put any stock in what she says had they come to the United States and she lived to be an old woman? And I don't think that her writings would have carried the same weight, nor would they have, you know, been an inspiration to others to do better in their lives if things had not played out the way they did. And I think the same is true of Bonhoeffer. I think that he made the right decision to go back. And that's the only reason that to this day he's, you know, still a pivotal figure in World War II politics and theology in Germany, is because of the fact that he did choose to go and continue standing up, despite the fact that he knew it would cost him his life. So whether or not he worked out the conundrum on paper, he obviously had worked it out in some degree in his mind, because it inspired him to return to Germany. And he was a very pivotal, I mean, his writings were very pivotal in the rebuilding of the Confessing Church after Hitler died. And so, you know, he ends up being a huge figure in rebuilding. And the Confessing Church's ability to pull itself back from the brink, because they had been so supportive of fascism that it almost completely destroyed the Confessing Church in Germany once it was all said and done. So Bonhoeffer's message of grace, cheap grace and costly grace, actually landed on their in their hearts and minds in the rebuilding of the church and rebuilding of Germany to some degree. And I think it's important nowadays that we reflect upon Bonhoeffer, his words and his actions, because we still face the onslaught of fascist philosophy in the world. You know, with you know, Germany getting ready to go to the polls again, and the AfD, which is the Nazi party in Germany, that's had a resurgence. It looks like they're going to win the majority of parliament again.
Well,
so,
like, you know, like through the Old Testament scriptures, you have people that are raised up with a particular work for generations and for groups. You know, obviously he is one of those modern prophets, like Dr. King has been to our country for the last 60 years, and his messages that have remained with us, and
right.
They still inspire, they still speak, and you know, they still are part of what we hold true for equality,
right,
in the world. And of course, Dr. King's pulling scriptures and, you know, teaching of how Christ would have lived, and
right.
You know, Bonhoeffer. Sometimes you have to have those people that stand up and are just, they're able to relay it in such ways for different segments of the population, different groups, different nationalities, that they can catch that.
Right.
And, you know, part of our assignment sometimes is to be that person that's, you know, you'll never reach everybody, but we are assigned to somebody. We are assigned to speak into the life of someone.
Right.
Or multiple people. You know, I'm not under the delusion that, you know, everybody, when they hear me preach, gets, you know, all the things that they need.
Right.
They should, but they don't. But my voice speaks to a specific group of people. And so, you know, it's so important for us to be able to step back and realize that people like him that were raised up to help usher in that message of change and transformation, because God knows they needed it at that time, is vital. And he is someone that was graced by the Almighty,
right,
to minister beyond his moments of life. And that message lives on. It's very inspiring. And, you know, those that forget history or don't learn history are destined to repeat it. And so hopefully,
right.
Hopefully people like us standing up and echoing those messages will wake folks up.
Right.
The church, and I can't speak for the church in foreign countries, but the church in America definitely is focused on things that are attempting to make their power greater versus making their love known. And that's hard to sit back and look, but
right.
It's what happens so often.
Well, and I think that, yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that Bonhoeffer made that point when he was at Union, too, was that American Christians in particular are very comfortable. You know, we don't face persecution. We have not faced persecution as a church. You know, despite the Karens that are out there who say, you know, Starbucks not having a Merry Christmas cup is a persecution of my faith. That's not persecution. You know, Bonhoeffer lived persecution. Bonhoeffer lived in a state, a country, where he was going to be put in prison for his beliefs. You know, and for doing what he felt was right. And so, you know, he was willing to... He was willing to take that that cost, willing to accept that cost. So, you know, I think it's an important message for the American church in particular to look at what he actually went through and to understand this is what real persecution is all about. And this is what speaking truth to power is all about. It's kind of like John the Baptist, you know. John the Baptist was willing to stand up to Herod knowing he would lose his head for it. You know, and he did. He lost his head for it.
Well, I think a lot of times people, they step back and, you know, talk about, oh, we're persecuted. Because, you know, that sounds better. You know, it sells product. It sells
right.
their books and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, is it possible that there's a, you know, an erosion of something, or... Is it possible that there's opposition? There's always opposition. There's always been opposition to Christianity.
Right.
Even, I mean, Jesus was killed by the religious.
Right.
So, yeah, well, there's plenty of that going on. But, you know, does it rise to the degree of actual, you know, persecution for the gospel's sake? And, you know, someone not saying Merry Christmas is not persecution for the gospel's
no.
sake. You know, sometimes it's just as simple as they're relaying their beliefs and they're relaying right. what they, how they practice their faith.
Right.
So, you know, persecution is, you know, sitting there trying to, silence by aggressive force, as a Bonhoeffer experience, mm-hmm. that message of change and radical love and grace. You know, people aren't being hauled out of their houses because they stood up and said, you know, Jesus loves you and so do I.
Right.
We're not having that here in our country.
Right.
There's places in the world that does happen, and they're
yes, it does.
they're persecuted for the gospel's sake. You know, yes, somebody just saying, "Oh, I don't agree with you," is not persecution. You know, it's a disagreement.
Right. And I think that we can have moral disagreements that, you know, as I believe it was James Baldwin said, you know, we can disagree on things, but when you're disagreeing with my right to exist, then it's not a disagreement, it's a moral issue. And I think that that's accurate to some degree. But, you know, we, as American Christians in particular, have to remember that, you know, just because a gay person wants to exist doesn't mean that, you know, they're trying to destroy all of Christianity. You know, that doesn't play. It doesn't have, doesn't work quite that way.
And that's under the assumption that the gay person doesn't also love the same God.
Right.
And I love how people assume so many things.
Well, you know, it's that concept that the American church has hung on to, that if you're gay, then you're automatically either an atheist or a Satanist. I
mean, oh, I've had family members say, "Oh, you talk about Jesus at your church?"
Well, duh.
It's like, I say, you know, yeah, same guy.
Same guy.
You know, yeah, I mean, we love the same God, and we worship the same Creator, and yeah, I know it's shocking, but we do.
I would play that video, but I don't think it'd have the same effect on TikTok. I mean, on podcast as it did on TikTok.
Same guy.
Probably wouldn't have the same effect. But you can go look it up. There's a video about a guy asking. It's a skit about a guy asking if the different Jesuses or different people are the same one.
The Jesus that walked on the water is the same as the stable Jesus.
Right. The one that got crucified.
Yeah. His friend saying, yeah, same guy.
Same guy. Same guy. Well, folks, I think we're going to wrap this one up as we have reached kind of the end of our topic. But we certainly appreciate everybody joining us for this live recording. You always join us every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on younow.com/Bishop Greg. It's younow.com/Bishop Greg. 8 p.m. Eastern every Saturday night we record. And then they'll be posted in the next few days up on pod.myocci.social or on our website, oursaintfrancis.org. Thank you, Reverend Mark, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for hosting.
Absolutely.
We miss Bishop Ben.
We miss Bishop Ben. He is off working tonight, taking care of poor souls at the hospital. So we wish him the best tonight. And we will be back again next week with another exciting topic. Till then, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/Expanding Your Faith. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.